We are starting a talk show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. I can be reached at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We start today's show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone, The Night Shift. Then I do an extended interview with the cello doll. You're going to want to hear that. Then a couple of pieces she performs on cello. Game of Thrones meets Beethoven, and the first movement from Bach's Cello Suite No. 1 in G Major, BWV 100. Stay tuned!
He sets up shop around 9 p.m. every night. I don't really know where his place of business is located, but thank goodness it is within audible range to our home. There are a few test bursts just to check and make sure the old pipes are working, perhaps a sip of hot tea with honey, an aviary sound check, if you will, the bird equivalent to the testing, 1, 2, 3, check, you hear at every concert and club show you've ever attended. I say he, because I've never seen it. He might be a she, or in today's PC lexicon, it might be a they. My kids have friends in their lives that they, my kids, refer to as they. Once when they come over, I was expecting a lot more people. All I got was one person. Then around 9:30, our headliner gets down to business. The show starts. Cheep, 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 doop, 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 chirp, 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 chirp. Then a brief rest. Then, tui, 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 chip, 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 reep, 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 reep. Then a brief rest. Then, reep, 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 chit, 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 chip, 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 chip. Then a rest. This continues all night long from about 9:30 p.m. until sunrise. In Georgia, we have a bird that sings at night called the whippoorwill. Its call is one call. Whippoorwill, whippoorwill, whippoorwill. Wonderful, but after a little while, sort of monotonous. Occasionally, you get to hear an owl hooting, if you're lucky. You almost have to be out in the country to hear an owl. The joree will call at night, but again, like the whippoorwill, the call is the same all night long. Joree, joree, joree. Our entertainer is a master of impressions and does not repeat. This leads me to believe he is a mockingbird. In the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch says, "It's a sin to kill a mockingbird." Miss Maudie, the cook in this fantastic movie, went on to say, "Your father's right. Mockingbirds don't do one thing except make music for us to enjoy. They don't eat up people's gardens. They don't nest in corn cribs. They don't do one thing but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird." Our entertainer makes music for us all night long. As a man of a certain age, I am up and down all night long. Our entertainer sings me back to sleep every time. Tui, 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 chip, 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 reep, 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 reep. As it gets brighter, but before the sunrise, the crows begin to wake. The lead crow will caw to wake the rest of the murder of crows. I think the naming of a grouping of crows a murder is appropriate. Crows are mean. They eat other birds, baby squirrels, anything they can rustle up. Crows are noisy. Crows are very social. By sunrise, the crows and the normal cacophony of the city have overwhelmed our entertainer. He goes to sleep, or maybe he goes out chasing crows. I hear him occasionally in the daytime. It is in the nighttime when he shines. As I finish this, it's about 4:30 a.m. I'm up after one of my trips to the bathroom. I normally take Kitty Kai with me into the bathroom as he likes to drink fresh water from the tap while I finish my business. Kai likes his water fresh, not a big drink, just enough to wet his whistle. Men my age don't sleep. We nap. 3 hours here, 2 hours there. It adds up. When Lori and I had kids, my mother told me, "You will never get another good night's sleep." Now I know what she was talking about. You can go through the infant stage and get no sleep, but when they grow up and go out in the world, it's even worse. A childless person would think that once they are gone, you can sleep well. It does not work that way. My son, Ari, is working up at Montecito Sequoia as a counselor this summer. I know he's safe up there. He has been up there every year of his life. He was there in utero. I still think about him before I go to sleep. He is finally back to performing some shows. Our headliner is outside singing his heart out. It is as if he knows the sun is coming, the crows are coming, the city sounds are coming, and he is building to a crescendo. He is closing his headline performance with a grand finale. He will be back tonight, 9:30 sharp. I look forward to falling to sleep to his performance. He is the headline attraction every night.
It's Tuesday, June 29th, 2021, and I have in studio the cello doll, a.k.a. Carolyn Regula. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you today and chat music.
Exactly. Well, I found you on Instagram. I guess once in a while something good comes out of this multi-trillion dollar experiment called the internet. And I find people I connect, and I've made wonderful friendships, and I've found wonderful guests to broadcast on radio. And I'm thoroughly enchanted with what you're doing. I'm a cellist. You're a cellist. You're posting a lot of fantastic videos, very insightful. You're so well-spoken and engaging. Why don't you say a word about yourself?
Sure. I'll recover a bit from being so flattered from you.
I'll get used to it.
A fellow cellist. Thank you. Yes. So I have been playing cello. This summer actually marks 20 years of playing cello. And I call myself the cello doll, and it really is a big part of my identity playing this instrument. And I have 3 music degrees, and they're from conservatories in Boston and New York City. And in addition to performing, I am also a composer, arranger, teacher, and I've lately been calling myself a musical storyteller from the narrative music videos I've been producing. And some of them I know you've already seen on Instagram and YouTube.
Well, you have this YouTube channel, just people can search the cello doll. And there's so many personal stories and specific engaging techniques for playing the cello, general musings about classical music. It's a really good channel and a lot of videos, and it's neat to see how you're investing yourself in this artistic technological project.
Oh, thank you. It definitely is a labor of love, as is a lot of things in the arts. But one reason I decided to pursue music professionally is because it was my top passion in life. You know, it brought me the most joy when I was studying it as a child. And that kind of connection is so powerful. So I wanted to pursue it. And yeah, it's just carried into my life today. Like you said, really aggressively making as much content as I can.
Well, you're confiding with us and being real and telling the truth, and it's very engaging. Let's get into the cello doll. Tell us about that, and how did it start?
So when I was going through my conservatory training, I absolutely loved playing chamber music. And what that means, it's usually groups of 2 to 8 musicians, and it's very intimate being on stage with your colleagues and expressing your feelings, the feelings of the piece, all through music. It's a really powerful experience. And I wanted to do that professionally. And for some reason, it could have been the timing or the location I was in, I had a hard time finding colleagues who felt as passionate about it as I did. You know, a lot of musicians want to pursue a solo career or an orchestra job. And that's totally fine. It's just, it wasn't in our cards to work on something super extensively. And then one summer when I was kind of struggling with this idea, I met this group called Time for Three. And I highly recommend you look into them. They are 2 violinists and a double bassist. And it's such a unique, beautiful sound. And these are highly virtuosic players. And they were doing mashups of pop artists with classical composers like Vivaldi. And they were just brilliant players. I was stunned. And now they write a lot of original music and play with orchestras. And I was so compelled and intrigued by combining genres. And that really kind of got my brain ticking. Because one thing I'm sure we'll get into is the classical music industry and how a lot of people find it unapproachable. And I started seeing this big need for modern audiences to understand, well, why do I love music? It's about so much more than the music on the page. And I wanted to find a way to tell that to people. So I started thinking about my skills as an arranger and a composer. And I started thinking, well, what if I find my own flair in translating classical music for people? And I realized the quickest way to have a big audience is online, through social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. You can instantly reach thousands of people. And I hadn't used social media beyond personal accounts and family photos and things like that, going out with friends. So I didn't really know what I was doing. If I'm going to be completely candid here, Pete, I didn't really know about algorithm or anything like that. So I took some time and researched, and I started posting my first videos. Some of them were me practicing, and I was starting to chart out these music videos that were very story-based, like a narrative. And they had costumes, and I was designing where I was gonna do these shoots, how I was going to do some camera angling, and this was all foreign to me. So I taught myself a lot of this, and it just kind of took off. I was stunned that in 1 year, I had over 12,000 followers on Instagram. And I was just staring at this going, okay, we're going to go with it and we're going to keep developing this. And it was interesting to explore myself as the cello doll, along with the people who were following me from the early days. So that was a lot, but it was and still is a huge journey for me.
Yes. Well, I think we're getting into the topic of artist versus entertainer. And we think of most people in the classical world as just artistic. They're playing music and it's serious. But, you know, just about any musician, when they're practicing alone in their living room, will look differently than they are on stage when they may be bobbing their head and, you know, putting some physicality into it to make it look a little more entertaining. Well, okay, I'm guilty of that. But then there's really the trend toward being a real entertainer now, where fashion comes in, maybe humor, silliness, maybe pandering or a persona. This has been happening since Stone Age, I'm guessing. But in the modern era, we had people like Liberace, who was an okay pianist, but had pianos covered with diamonds. And if you ask the average American to name a pianist, they would say Liberace. They wouldn't say, well, of that era, like Van Cliburn. And then we had, more recently, a violinist named Nigel Kennedy. And then in the cello field, well, we have Apocalyptica and Rasputina coming up. And some of it is just to be entertaining, but some of it is also this mixing of different influences and this mashing up of things we love. It's not just some kind of contrived thing or put on. It's just the natural mixing of creative and artistic flows that happen in any civilization.
Exactly. And I love that you brought up Apocalyptica, because they're actually one of my favorite music groups. And when I first discovered them, I was just so entranced, because I'm also very much into this darker, more gothic aesthetic, and they are super into that, and their playing is also very virtuosic. And because of my training, I can really see that and how they perform. And I love that you brought them up, because I always joke that Cello Doll is part Apocalyptica. Like, if you were going to make a Cello Doll recipe, there's definitely Apocalyptica in there somewhere.
Right. By the way, the name just totally fits you, Cello Doll. Just something about you're stylish and lovely and sparkling and a little otherworldly. Just that the name is great.
Oh, thank you.
Again, I'm talking to Carolyn Regula, carolynregula.com. You can search her on YouTube, The Cello Doll. Just a wonderful series of videos. So let's talk a little bit more about this mashing up that you're doing.
One of my big projects that I took on very early for my skill set at the time, you know, looking back on it, I was, wow, I made this happen. Oh my goodness. And that's the great thing about this career too, is I've learned so many incredible things, like videotaping and how do you make a music video. But one of the biggest projects I decided to create was a Game of Thrones mashup with romantic composers. So I did Beethoven and Brahms together, weaving in and out of some of the most popular tracks from the Game of Thrones TV series soundtrack. And I actually got to do this as a part of a course at my conservatory at the time, because I actually took a course on historic examples of genre fusion. So I said, I am going to make this into something I can use for school. So the reason I chose this pairing was because the final season of Game of Thrones was about to come out, so I knew it was going to be really popular. I myself love the television series. I mean, the final season, that's a whole nother episode, Pete. We could talk about that final season. But I actually looked into some interviews with the composer, Raman Jawandi, and he said that romantic composers had a huge influence on him when he first started looking into composition. So he specifically mentioned Beethoven and Brahms in an interview. So that's kind of where I decided to go. And I said, well, let's see if anything I can find fits. You know, maybe in his subconscious, he was thinking about Beethoven or Brahms while composing Game of Thrones music. So with my background, I also knew some pieces with kind of the same emotional characteristic. And that is so important for me when I write these mashups, the emotional connection between the pieces. So the opening title for Game of Thrones is the most famous piece from that soundtrack. And it's about a battle approaching. It's very stormy. Stormy. Okay. I'm going to do Beethoven 5, the opening of Beethoven 5. And these two just worked so beautifully together, in my opinion, that it was so fun and easy to weave them in and out of each other. And I made a music video where I was wearing Cersei's crown from the series, and I was in a darkly lit room with a really high ceiling, and it was a lot of fun. So, to speak generally, I really look for mood and atmosphere when I make these mashups. It's not exactly, do these play at the same speed? Are they in the same key? Are they written around the same decade? That's not really what I focus on. It's great if they're in the same key. That makes my job really easy. But it's a lot about the story behind the piece and the general atmosphere. Because I think even if you're not a trained musician, emotion is something we can all relate to. And I love music in that sense being a universal language. So I realized if I could tap into the emotion and convey that through film, the storyline and convey that through film, I could translate Beethoven or Brahms into something someone who loves Game of Thrones could appreciate. And in that way, I'm translating and presenting this classical piece in a way you might not get in a concert hall.
Mm. We're talking now about having music be accessible. And in your videos, you do talk about how it's a struggle in the classical music world to fund symphonies. I mean, they take a lot of money. Or to put on an opera, it's a lot of money. Getting kids to practice and new talent and just the whole range of topics that are a challenge to the classical music world. But this blending of music you're talking about, I mean, that's been happening throughout classical music. By the way, people think of the early composers as these antique, wig-wearing, stuffy people. But like Mozart, I believe he was something of a radical, and you can hear his beautiful piece where he combined Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star with his classical chops, and it's a great piece of music. And Beethoven was a big radical. He was a political radical. Watch his opera called Fidelio. But he's also blending like bird sounds in his Symphony No. 6, the Pastorale. So people were constantly experimenting within the milieu they lived in. We now have electronic instruments and all kinds of different fashion styles, so we can go in a lot of different directions than they could. But, I mean, all of jazz is, it's syncretic. It's a bunch of traditions put together. And I think you're following in that beautiful tradition.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, you mentioned fashion. I mean, talk about crazy wigs back then. If you think about it, if Mozart got transported here to 2021, he would be a major influencer just because of his fashion. It's incredible what they wore back then. And I agree with you. These people back in their day were rock stars. They were celebrities. They were the Lady Gaga of their lifetime, because a huge thing that I think makes classical music intimidating for some people, it's one of the oldest genres of music that is still around today. And it has a lot of history. A lot of people go to music school and spend years of education to learn it and play this instrument for decades. The same can be said for singers in any genre. Don't get me wrong. Those people are also absolutely highly trained and skilled. But there's just been this giant institution built around classical music, and in combination with the history is why I think it can be intimidating for some people. So I really think utilizing these modern platforms and presenting it online can be key to making it relevant and accessible. I did a live stream a few weeks ago, and someone was watching from Mexico. And I thought that was amazing. And if I was doing a presentation performance talk live, that person isn't going to buy a plane ticket to come see me. Maybe yet. Who knows? That would be amazing. I'd be so flattered. But it's just not practical. So I think classical music is going to start to be easier to understand for people. And you brought up a great point earlier about entertainers with personalities. That's huge. If you have a friendly, approachable personality that people love and they're interested in what you have to say, they're going to like your art. They're going to want to hear more about your art. So online, you can call them influencers, content creators. They have a lot of power in making their art known and finding their niche.
I think people need to recognize that what we have remaining in classical music is the best of thousands and thousands of pieces that were written over hundreds of years. I mean, there's this enormous amount of classical music written that wasn't any good, but just the cream, the best of it, has survived. When I turn on the radio, that's generally what I'm listening to, classical music, because it is so rich and deep and developed and intelligent. I just happen to be lucky to be a classical cellist as a young man, so it opened to me. I understand it. I appreciate it. I remember in the dark days of my teenage years, you know, reading The Hobbit and listening to Mozart's clarinet quintet in A to get me through it, you know, to get me through those kind of semi-suicidal years. Mozart did that. Now, it may be popular music for a lot of teenagers today, and they're just not, classical music isn't accessible to them because they don't get it. But in 100 years or 500 years, a few pieces that have been created in the popular field will have survived. Most of what we're hearing these days will be long forgotten, and only the very, very best of what's being turned out today will still be listened to. So we have the filter of time and excellence that the classical genre presents to us. Well, let's go a little bit deeper now. In one of your videos, you talk about you were picked on and bullied as a kid, and it was through the cello, perhaps, that helped get you through. Let's talk about art as a vehicle for personal transformation or redemption.
Yes, unfortunately, I was somebody who was picked on in elementary school, and it really had a negative effect on my self-esteem. And to say the least, I mean, that's a given. If you go to school every day and somebody's picking on the way you look or the way you dress, or because you care about your grades and doing well, you're a weirdo nerd. And it really affected how I saw myself, how I wanted to present myself. And when I found the cello when I was 8, I truly think it saved me from depression, all of these things that children go through from being bullied, because I had a beautiful, productive craft that I was so focused on, it distracted me from the bullying. And then I remember when I gave one of my first quote-unquote concerts, it was like show and tell day at school, and I was playing a piece from the Suzuki cello books, which Suzuki was a string teacher, and he created this method that became really popular and is still taught today, and I learned the music from those books. So it's common for really, really young musicians. And I played this piece, and the kids started clapping, and they said, "Wow, Carolyn, that's so cool. I've never heard an instrument like that. That sounded great. Wow, I had no idea you could play that." And I was stunned, Pete. I was so stunned because these were the same kids who picked on me and teased me. And it was very empowering and encouraging, because not only was I getting positive feedback, but it was also because I put in work practicing and learning this piece of music. So it really fueled my fire to want to improve and grow. And I started becoming more confident. And then I played in some of the school talent shows or music concerts. I would play solo cello in those. And then I started being known as the cello kid rather than the nerdy kid or the chubby kid, as how I was before, unfortunately. According to them, you know, they say kids are cruel, and they can be, because they don't understand how words can have a lasting impact. But it was amazing. The only thing, it's a blessing, and there's also a downside, because I will say, from those early years, the cello is so intertwined with my self-esteem. So that is something, we're talking about a deep level here. This is deep, that if I have a great day with the cello, I feel great. But then if I don't have such a good day in my practice room, it can be a downer, because musicians have such a close emotional connection with their instrument that it's so powerful, but it can also affect us in a negative way. But that being said, I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, I truly tell people, I think music saved and changed my entire life just because I picked it up when I was 8.
Well, you know, artists, we're sensitive people. And if we have any problem, it's getting overwhelmed in the world. Our nervous system is tender. Difficult emotions that are around us impact us severely, and we have to figure out how to manage all this sensitivity. And when we do, then we can use it to create our art. But I just want to encourage listeners to check out The Cello Doll on YouTube or CarolynRegula.com to see more about how the swan was once, well, figuratively speaking, the ugly duckling. Yes, you will enjoy what she's created of herself. And you were saying even how the cello doll was kind of a personal revelation, that revealed a lot to you about who you were. It wasn't just something put on.
Yeah, and I think we're having a bit of a telekinetic link here, Pete, because that's literally what I was going to talk about next, and you beat me to it.
Oh, Mystic Pete here. Bam!
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And it's interesting with famous artists or celebrities, even if you look at somebody when they were discovered to present day, they also change. You know, just because somebody might make it big or be named a celebrity or have that status, you also see them grow and change as their career progresses. And that happens with every artist, every performer. You could argue anyone in any industry. But me personally, Cello Doll, as I said earlier, I started it with this really passionate mission. The planning, not so much. You know, I did research on social media and all of those things, but I wanted to do this also as a journey for me to discover what this spark I call Cello Doll was going to become. And I've learned I love crafting music videos that tell a story. I love arranging music that I can play, popular songs, classical pieces, whatever you want to call it. And I'm learning more about these skill sets that are becoming new passions.
So it's been a process-oriented experience. The Cello Doll has changed you, and you've therefore brought more to the Cello Doll.
Yes, and another thing about Cello Doll is people call it an alter ego. And it's interesting because I immediately say, no, it's a huge saturation of myself. You know, if I was constantly not on 10, but 14, that's Cello Doll. It's like my most extroverted self. Super nerdy, but kind of gothic and quirky and just a hardcore music lover. And I really like oversaturating that. And as you said, entertaining. And yes, it is dialed high, but it's really important for me that it always comes from myself, that I don't fabricate things. And I really think about that a lot because social media and putting yourself online, you get to reach thousands and thousands of people, but that's also potential peer pressure from a huge audience. And you hear about it all the time with social influencers, and you find out they Photoshop something or something like that. So it is really important to me that Cello Doll is always an extension of myself, and that I also get to turn up certain parts of my personality to have fun in a music video or to make a dark, brooding music video. So it's been a really fun exploration, and at the same time, I'm learning about new things I love that I never did in music school.
Well, now we're talking about the deep archetypical journey of the artist, and sometimes our muse presents because of our pain or because we're being bullied in school. You know, the teenage kid wants to get more female attention, so he picks up the guitar, and what do you know, a few years later he's just into the guitar, and you know, like the dating thing is some long ago memory. You know, we get driven in these directions. And sometimes we put on a mask, but the mask is us. You know, as you're saying, the Cello Doll, it's just a part of you. And you're able to invest it with such power because it's a facet of your personality that wants expression. And I'll just take a moment. Before this interview, we talked about our own journeys. And you said, well, why don't you talk about yourself a little bit? Since you're a cellist, for crying out loud. Well, so the theme song for this show, Mystic Pete Chronicles, is actually me playing cello and chanting a piece I composed, which I play twice on the radio every week, bookending my show. But so I was a classical cellist, and I can't say I was ever great at it. It was really hard for me to put together this linear process of reading notes with this emotional process of music inside of me. So I was okay as a classical player. Some people like you can read notes and do this linear thing and be fantastic at it. But it turned out to be not quite my thing, and I put the cello down when I was around 17 or so. In my early 20s, I was in an apartment building in the backyard, and I said, why don't I just bring out the cello and play a little bit in the backyard here? And I decided to not bring any music, and I started to play just one note. I just decided to hear the sound of the cello, just one whole note. One led to two, and two led to three. I'm just playing from my feelings. And as it happened, the manager of the building, this old drunk, grouchy guy, walks up, and I figure I'm busted. But he starts weeping. This man, like an angry guy, he starts crying, and he said it reminded him of his wife, and like this whole emotional thing happened back here just because I'm playing what I'm feeling, this very sweet, long, low notes on the C string. That's how I started to find my muse. I had this technique in back of me. I had the nervous system training, but I kind of needed to put down that iteration to start over and find my own voice. My voice is much slower and ambient and emotional and feeling and playing, improvising with the audience. Like I play what the audience is feeling, and often people cry when I play music. Hopefully it's not because I'm out of tune. So I've gotten into this whole thing where I do what's called a sound meditation or sound baths. And I've played for hundreds or even thousands of people lying down, closing their eyes. And I take them on this long inner journey and open up some kind of portal to some imaginative astral realm, something like that. And it's very moving, and people often have, well, rather profound experiences. Completely different from what I was trained for. It was another mask, and I needed to find that mask all alone in the backyard, you know, when I was lonely. So that's where this has led me, a divergent cellist, like somebody who's done their own thing with it, as have you. That's kind of where I'm getting to. Like, you've gone in an entirely different direction, but just following your muse and what you felt like, and just doing some inner impulse, some passion just came out of you. And here it is.
Yes. And before I reply, I just wanted to thank you, Pete, for sharing such an intimate and beautiful story about your cello and kind of rediscovering it in that backyard and using it as a vehicle for your own voice and emotion. You know, I had a teacher who told me once, you have to play the cello. The cello can't play you. And he meant it in more of a technical aspect in the moment, basically saying I was working too hard to try to play a certain part. But I think it absolutely applies to emotion as well. And I have to say, I did see that clip you sent me, and it was very beautiful and compelling. And I said, ooh, I want to listen to this when I do my yoga. I want to turn on and have Mystic Pete serenading me with this sound bath. It was beautiful. And I think your story is great. And I thought it was really cool how we both started with this one instrument. That was the common thread. And you, me, and hundreds of cellists around the world have such unique opportunities and unique ways that they present themselves. And a quick note I want to make, these options weren't around 50 years ago. The time we're living in now is so exciting for musicians because 50 years ago, online streaming, YouTube, these weren't things that people thought about or even knew about. 50, 80 years ago. And the music industry has gone through so many transformations that now instrumentalists have so many opportunities outside of the orchestra or a solo career. So it is a very exciting time to be a musician.
Yes, yes. There are so many new vehicles and avenues. Well, interestingly, I found you on Instagram, the Cello Doll. I've found a whole lot of other cellists playing there that are just marvelous talents. So let's like come into the moment now and present reality. And out of all this Jungian archetypical stuff, I just made a list before I talked to you about some of the cellists I've found. It used to be that we learned about classical musicians or cellists on the radio. If they had recordings, and those have had, they had a label behind them, and they were some kind of a celebrity, we found out about them when we became fans. And we know about people like Janos Starker and Shostakovich and Casals and Pietragorsky. I remember when I was a teenager, Michael Majsky and a few others. So Jeffrey Solo was a guy back then. But on Instagram, I found all these other wonderful talents, world-level talents that I just don't hear on the radio. So I'm wondering if I have a little list here. Maybe you can add a few when I'm done reading this, of people you're watching that may not be celebrities, but they're really powerful cellists or other musicians. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. One guy I'm very impressed with is a guy named Johannes Moser, M-O-S-E-R. And then there's another guy, Santiago Canyon Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these two guys play, and it's like powerful. There's a woman named Margarita Balanas, and Benedict Klockner, I guess he's German, and a guy named Shiku Kane Mason. It's hyphenated. Wow, he's good. Then there's this lady named Wendy Law, who's a cello teacher, and she posts all these videos that are very engaging and funny, and I could have learned how to play cello from watching her videos, as well as yours. Then there's this other guy I want to mention. He's a violinist named Salvatore Lombardi. A really good violinist, but he's also a clown. So he does all these weird mashups and does this kind of goofy stuff that, frankly, it just makes playing the violin look like a whole lot of fun. There's some people you can check out, easy to find and get into classical music that way. Anybody come to your mind?
Well, actually, Wendy Law is one of my Instagram pen pals. And she and I started on Instagram about the same time. And it's been really fun watching each other's platforms grow. So I'm really familiar with Wendy Law's work. Another dear, dear friend of mine, we call ourselves Gothic Twin Sisters. She goes by Cello Bat. And her name's Sarah Chafee. And she lives in Las Vegas. And before the pandemic, things currently are kind of heating up again, thankfully, for live shows. But she was the cellist for Aerosmith's residency, their residency show in Las Vegas. And she and I have a couple videos together where we've done remote cello quartet covers. So she's a dear friend of mine, and she writes these beautiful arrangements of popular music for string quartets and cello duos and string trios. So she's a powerhouse of a string arranger. So she's Cello Bat, and I'm Cello Doll, so we thought it was hilarious.
Ha! Great. B-A-T, like the small flying mammal.
Yes. And another pair of gentlemen who are famous in our industry for comedy is Two Set Violin. They're two violinists from Australia, and they went through hardcore conservatory training, and they came out the other side beautiful players, the both of them, beautiful violin players, and they do classical music sketches, And they have this joke that you have to practice 40 hours a day. That's how much you have to practice, 40 hours a day. And that was one of their huge jokes. And they make these videos about practice room culture, orchestra rehearsal culture. And there are these jokes that are so hilarious to anybody who's played a classical instrument, even if you only did it in high school, because it's so relatable and funny. And because people listen to their comedy, they talk also about the social issues around classical musicians, like how mental health needs to be discussed more and things like that. So through their comedy, they've acquired a big audience. And as a result, they can also bring up these compelling issues that have to be talked about. So two set violin, all spelt out, no numbers. And they have a huge YouTube and Instagram following. So I would recommend them as well.
You know, this is what artists do. If you give us a pandemic, we find new ways to make art. Give us a war, give us a famine, whatever you give us, we will turn it into art and figure out ways to continue creating and help make sense of it for the world. So wrapping up now, Carolyn, any final words you'd like to tell our listening audience?
Sure. I did want to touch briefly on something you mentioned earlier, Pete, when you were sharing your own story that I think is so important, is the power for music to transform or change a person's reality for the duration that they're listening. We can transport people into somewhere completely different in their mind and their imagination. And I think that is a way. Music is so universal as a language. And I think that's so beautiful. So that's something you and I really have in common, is we want to transform the listener by means of what they visually see in their mind or what they're emotionally feeling. And you talked about your sound baths, and I talk about my music videos and designing these stories. And that is so powerful. You know, with classical music, with instrumental music too, there's no lyrics, there's no words. So I really think using music videos and social media can be a powerful way to translate these stories about these pieces I learned because I went to conservatory and I learned music history. So I know the stories of why these pieces were written. So I think it's so beautiful that we can transport the audience. It is so powerful. And I am so glad to have a new cello buddy named Mystic Pete. That is also something I had to say before the interview came to a close. I'm so happy to have met you, Pete, as a fellow cellist, and to go on a deep dive today. It's been fabulous. I've had a great time talking with you.
I'm just wrapping it up with Carolyn Regula at carolynregula.com, also known as the Cello Doll. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming to the end of a talk show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. I can be reached at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We started today's show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called The Night Shift. Then I did an extended interview with the cello doll, and we heard her perform two pieces, Game of Thrones meets Beethoven, and the first movement from Bach's Cello Suite No. 1 in G Major, BWV 100. Hope you tune in next week. Thanks so much for listening. Mystic Pete out.